Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Welcome to Hard Talk on the BBC World Service with me, Stephen Sacker. My guest today is looking ahead to the European summer, knowing that it'll bring with it a series of difficult decisions. Harry Theoharis is Greece's Minister for Tourism. His country relies on travel and tourism for a fifth of its national income, so it's easy to understand why he is under enormous pressure to open the country up to overseas visitors after more than a year of COVID restrictions. But is it too early to be encouraging millions of holidaymakers to return to Greece's beaches and antiquities? COVID infections are down from their peak, but the country's hospitals are still feeling the strain, and Greece has one of the slowest vaccine rollout rates of any EU member state. There are also the lessons of last year. Greece eased travel restrictions last summer, and then a second surge of infections followed in the autumn. So do lessons need to be learned? This isn't just a dilemma for Greece, of course. As the impact of COVID varies wildly across the globe, just how much danger is there in restoring pre-COVID levels of international mobility? Well, Harry Theoharis joins me now. Welcome to Hard Talk.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you here in London. You are here to tell the world that Greece is now open for tourism and for business. But the truth is, Greece still has a very serious COVID problem.
Well, I wouldn't call it serious, but it's as serious as many countries in Europe. The third wave has been hitting Europe hard, but we're over the apex. The numbers are getting better day by day. And I think Greece is ready with a complete, mature and professional system to allow people again during the summer season.
Right, but one of the gauges of how countries are doing is not just the infection rate, and your infection rate spiked in April, but it's coming down, but it's also about how many vaccines you're delivering, and you're one of the slowest countries in Europe to get your people vaccinated, and everybody else around the world is going to see that, and they're going to worry.
No, we're not one of the slowest countries. I would dispute that.
Well, you're in the bottom five.
No. I'm
afraid the figures say you are.
Our system is a very complete system in terms of vaccinating people. We keep every second dose and we keep both appointments for everyone. So we're not pushing ahead quicker than the vaccines that we have. So as soon as we get the vaccines, we use them immediately. We vaccinate 1.1% of the population daily, and that's one of the best rates currently in Europe.
The fact is, about a quarter of your population has had a vaccine. You're in London, where the rate is something like two-thirds of the entire population has had at least a first dose. So you are...
I'm not disputing that,
of
course.
You're way behind.
The UK is one of the leaders in terms of the vaccination rate. You have chosen a single-dose strategy. We have a different strategy, but the point is, of course, that we are constrained by the vaccine delivery that Europe as a whole has. But I assure you, we have a very professional system, a complete system that uses every vaccine as soon as we get it.
We're very mindful that back in the summer of last year, when, of course, you were tourism minister at the time, Greece took the decision to invite tourists back. And what we saw in the autumn was a very serious second wave in Greece, which the Greek people, according to all of the opinion polls I've seen, clearly linked and associated with the decision to let foreign visitors back in. Are you not in danger of making the same mistake all over again?
This is an understandable attitude that normally people in countries have, that it's really about the foreigners, or this is more, if you like, importing the problem. The reality is this, that during the summer, we did not have the second wave, the spike. The popular tourism.
Well, no, you had it in the autumn. All of these visitors had been in your country.
We had it at the same time as Germany did and the north of Europe. So we had it with the rest of Europe. So effectively, tourism did not have anything to do with it. It's really the winter. It's really the ebbs and flows of the disease that everybody had to endure. So every numbers that we have seen and research points to that. Koch Institute, this is a German research, shows that tourism did not affect Greece's numbers, and actually it did not even affect Germany's numbers on the way back.
Well, I think your own public are a little sceptical about that, according to surveys I've seen of the Greek public opinion. But there's another problem too when it comes to confidence and trust. It seems to me you have overpromised and you've underdelivered. For example, your government said that in order to get tourism going again, you would focus on the famous Greek islands where so many people want to visit. You said that you would have them fully vaccinated by the end of April. Well, here we are in May, and you're nowhere near having the Greek island population fully vaccinated.
We never promised that all the islands will be vaccinated by the end of April. We promised that the first batch of the islands, the smaller batch of the islands, will be vaccinated, and they are. 32 islands have been already vaccinated. The second batch of another 36 islands will be complete by the end of May. And there is a plan of completing the wall of immunity well within June, so ready for the peak of the season, which is in July and August.
We all read the newspapers, Minister. You will know that we know that, for example, in one Greek island, Kalymnos, they've had to go into a local lockdown in the last week because of a dangerous surge in new COVID cases. People read that and they think, maybe Greece isn't a great idea.
I think that's the other way around. What this shows you, this example, is the fact that we're not afraid to take the difficult decisions. We will take whatever local measures are necessary without any willingness to hide things under the rug, as it were, to ensure everybody's safety. Greece has managed to fare slightly better, I would say, than throughout the crisis than the rest of Europe. And the reason we did that is because we took the health and safety of both our citizens and our visitors. Other countries, last season, they announced that they did not talk about the full number of cases, people without symptoms, the asymptomatic cases, but only the people with symptoms. This is not something that Greece is doing. We are fully transparent, and this is part of the reason why I'm here as well, but we had a great discussion and transparency throughout last season with the relevant authorities of the UK.
Your timing in launching Greece, and I think you're choosing the date May 14th to say, you know, we are open for business, tourists, please come visit in the way that you have in previous years. The timing's a little unfortunate. Before we get to what the British government is saying, look at the US State Department. They have put Greece on the list of countries designated as level 4 with the simple message, do not travel.
Well, they're saying it about the UK as well. So they're saying it about 80% of the globe. Of course, every country has its own right. It's a sovereign decision to categorize and use whatever traffic light system or whatever categorization system they want to use. We are maintaining, these are our numbers, and according to the criteria that we would have put, Greece is certainly in the lower end of the
scale. But the problem, here you are, again, about timing, in London, at the very moment that the UK government has issued a list of countries, which they're now calling the Green List, where travel can be conducted by British tourists and visitors without quarantine when they return. Greece is not on the green list. Greece is on an amber list, and it means people will have to quarantine when they come home. What's your message to the British government?
Well, the message is that, of course, this is a decision that they have to make on their own terms and with their own data. We're here to explain and...
Do you think they've got it wrong?
Well, we think that they could have taken, for example, a more regional approach. They could have taken an approach they took last summer, where not the whole of the country is in a specific list, but, for example, the islands where the numbers are better could be in a list. And we also welcome the fact that this kind of wording is in the Foreign Office's website. So there is a wording that points toward that direction, that, for example, Crete or the Ionian or the Aegean Islands are places that people could travel.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, in an average year, you get a vast amount of your tourist revenues from British tourists. And as things stand, they're not going to be going to Greece right now, because they would have to quarantine when they come home. It's just not realistic.
Of course, it's not realistic. That's why we're here to discuss with the government all the details, the data that they might need in order to review their decision when they have the review schedule. If I'm not mistaken, it's every 3 weeks. So we need to ensure that they at least have all the information necessary or relevant in order to make an informed decision. That's all we're asking for.
Minister, are you, to be blunt about it, putting economics before public health?
No, we're not. to be very precise and clear about it in terms of my message. We are taking a balanced approach. I will just remind you that just recently, WTTC, the World Travel and Tourism Council, one of the most prestigious private sector bodies in tourism in the world, awarded us the Global Award for Excellence in terms of the COVID response. So what we're saying is that we need to keep a balance. We need to keep a balance in terms of the economic activity and, of course, in terms of the health and safety.
But there is no balance because the Greek economy isn't balanced. The truth is you are massively dependent on tourism. I think almost 20% of your entire national income comes from travel and tourism. So you are, to use that word again, dependent on reviving this business, even at the risk of stoking the flames of the pandemic?
Well, I'm not sure if the word is dependence. I mean, I can understand
it. I can't think of any other word.
Sure, I can understand it. But let's just say, first of all, that Europe is the region which is the most touristically developed in the world. So on average, more than 10% of Europe's revenue and GDP comes from tourism. So this is an important industry in any case.
You're here proclaiming Greece open for full tourism business as of May 14. The French government is being much more cautious. They're saying we'll look at it again in June, and if we do open up to tourists in June, they are absolutely going to have to travel with some sort of a vaccine passport or proof that they are completely without any risk of COVID-19. Why can't Europe take a unified position? Because in some European capitals, it looks like you Greeks are jumping the gun. You're being irresponsible.
Not really. We are being actually proactive. What we're saying is that the digital green pass, it's a Greek idea. We sent a letter, our Prime Minister sent a letter on the 12th of January to Ursula von der Leyen saying that this is an idea that we should develop in order to underpin our return to normality. And this is something that has, you know, progressed a lot, and it's on the brink of actually being implemented. So this is a very, very important step on the way.
There isn't the truth that the pandemic has ensured that tourism will never be quite the same again, not in the foreseeable future anyway. When people get to Greece and you're proclaiming how open you are, they will still have to act in a different way. There'll be social distancing. There will be masks in public places. Nightclubs won't be operating in the way they used to across the Greek islands. All sorts of things will be different about people's vacations, their holidays. Are you convinced people want to go on holiday in that situation?
Yes, I am convinced because we saw it last year. So if you asked me that question a year ago, I would have many doubts. But we saw this in practice last year. So, and this is, if you like, the core of the message. The message is that this is not laissez-faire. This is not a license without any preconditions to come to Greece or to come to any destination and just have fun the way we used to have fun before the pandemic
started. So fun isn't on the agenda?
Of course, fun is on the agenda, but it's not the same way. Because, of course, we will have social distancing, of course we have protocols, but those protocols do not alter the core of the experiences, which is relaxation. And part of that relaxation is being sure that people next to you are also vaccinated or they have a negative test. We have preconditions before you travel, like vaccination, like the negative test or recovery certificates. We have at the borders random testing and targeted testing with an artificial intelligence system that targets our testing facilities to where the risk is. So this is an important part. We have quarantine hotels. And of course, we have those protocols that you mentioned, the social distancing, the mask wearing, all those things that will keep us safe. Mm. And finally, the vaccination drive that we mentioned, both in terms of the islands and, of course, the people working in the industry.
Do you acknowledge that the tourism business in Greece will never be quite as big going forward as it was in the past, both in terms of the overall numbers, the many millions who visited every summer, and also the revenues? It isn't going to be quite as good in the future as it was in the past, is it?
Well, there are going to be many long-term changes happening in the tourism industry, and I can acknowledge that. We saw trends that we saw them before the pandemic accelerate, like, for example, people booking late, the more digital experience, the more slow tourism. Those things have been accelerated. Some things going back. There's a lot of single-use plastic because people are afraid. You know, all the sustainability on the environmental side has taken one step back, and the fear of safety has taking the front seat. So we will see a lot of changes. And of course, it will take time before we reach the kind of levels that we saw back in 2019 or 2018, of course.
You sit on the World Travel Organization's Council, I think, a special committee on sort of crisis management.
That's right.
Isn't one of the messages of the pandemic that we need to reconsider many different ways in which the world has worked? And one of those ways we need to reconsider is how people travel, how many assumptions we make about our right to have international holidays, to cheap airfares. It's not just about responding to coronavirus, it's also about responding to the state of our planet. And would you accept, as a tourism minister, that you need to rethink how tourism works in your country and the degree of dependency you have on it?
I have no problem agreeing with that. At the same time, we need to think about all those lost jobs. We need to think about the supporting of communities that through tourism, they have the revenue required in order to make those smaller communities sustainable economically. So we need to look at all those things together at the same time. But there's no doubt that we have to strategically realign the tourism industry.
Let's switch track a little bit, because I'm mindful that you're a minister in a government which has, over the last year and more, been seen by the international community as flouting international law in a way that has tarnished your country's reputation. I'm thinking of the way you handle the migration crisis and the numbers of people who are crossing the Mediterranean trying to enter Greek waters and to get access to Greek territory. You flout international law in the way you push those people away. Do you acknowledge, as tourism minister, it is bad for Greece's reputation?
It would have been bad if it were true, but it's not true. In any case, this is happening to the borders being patrolled together with Frontex, an international organization, a European organization.
One of the sources which tells us that Greece is violating international law is actually from Frontex itself. There have been leaked reports saying that Frontex is deeply dissatisfied with particular incidents when Greek boats with Greek security personnel on board have indeed forced migrants out of Greek waters back where they came from.
We are patrolling our borders in the way which is compliant with international law. Any incidents that may have happened are being dealt with in the usual manner of investigation in the usual channels.
I don't know how much research you've done on this, but the Border Violence Monitoring Network, a reputable organization which tries to keep tabs on what Greece and other countries are doing with migrants, it has powerful evidence that there has been, quote, disproportionate excessive use of force, quote, extremely cruel examples of police violence documented in 2020 included prolonged excessive beatings, often of naked or semi-naked bodies, water immersion, physical abuse of women and children, the use of metal rods to inflict injury, all of this on migrants by your country's security personnel.
Well, I mean, any of those allegations, I'm sure there are channels and they've been investigated. And if there are any truth in that matter, they will be dealt in a normal fashion.
Well, your country's been taken to the European Court of Human Rights.
Well, of course, and if that's the case, the case will be dealt according to the standards and the international law. I assure you, our government is committed to adhering to international law. There is no doubt about that. At the same time, of course, we will not accept the migration issue being used as a weapon against our country.
Another thought about Greece and its reputation and standing in the world, it's a more general point about the state of your economy and what is happening to the Greek people. 2008 is a long time ago in political terms, and yet, for all of your efforts to recover from the financial crash and the bailout money you've received from the European Union, one third of all young Greek adults are still out of work. Why is it that for all of the measures taken and the help given, the Greek economy is still in such a parlous place?
Well, the Greek economy, of course, has gone through 10-year financial crisis, which was a very, very difficult period. And of course, that has left its mark. And at the same time, as we were coming out of this crisis, spreading our wings, as it were, in terms of growth again, this pandemic happened. What has happened is that Greece is, if you like, during this pandemic, is the positive surprise of the pandemic. All the international institutions...
Really?
Institutions,
I mean, your GDP is frankly barely half of what it was before the financial crash. I mean, you're in a hole, and it's very hard to see the country ever getting out of it.
Well, a lot of investment is currently happening in Greece. The international institutions, just last year, the consensus was that our drop in GDP because of the pandemic would have been around minus 10.5. The actual numbers were 8.2, much, much better. That's almost 2.5 percentages of GDP better than the consensus. So what I'm saying is that during the crisis, a very difficult period for everyone, of course, a difficult period for Greece. You said how important already tourism has been and how difficult it has been for tourism in particular globally. Greece has managed to overperform, has managed to deal with this in a professional manner, and I think we're well poised in returning back to growth. All the institutions project good growth both for this year and the next one.
A final thought for you, Minister, and again, it comes out of your trip to London. You want a very positive relationship with the British government and with the British people, because, of course, you want to encourage us all to visit Greece. There is one very thorny issue.
Not just because we want you to visit Greece, because we share our values, because we share a common history together.
Well, there's one thing, Minister.
We've been together in many, good times and bad times, in wars and in peaceful times. So this is
Minister,
why
there's
we
one thing you're not quite so keen on sharing. There's one thing you're not quite so keen on sharing with the British, and that is the Parthenon, the magnificent, unique Parthenon sculptures, sometimes known in the UK as the Elgin Marbles, which was taken in the early 19th century from the Parthenon by the Earl of Elgin. They're in the British Museum. They are magnificent, but your government has insisted for a very long time they must be returned to Athens. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has made it plain he has no interest in cooperating with that wish. How big a thorn in the relationship is that going to be?
Well, we have our position. We acknowledge the British position. We will continue explaining our arguments for the return of those marbles, because they are in a unique position currently to be united with the rest of the Parthenon marbles. So we will, of course, continue our, campaign, quote-unquote, explaining to the British public and to the British government that this is the right way to go.
But let me be clear about
it. We acknowledge their position as well.
Well, there are many museums around the world who are reassessing their collections in the light of the realities of colonialism, imperialism, of theft going back many centuries. Are you saying to Britain today that Britain's continued possession of these marbles is immoral, unethical, and deeply wrong?
Well, I'm saying certainly that it's wrong and they should reconsider it. I wouldn't want to expand this into the moral realm, but certainly they should acknowledge that the rightful place for those marbles is in the new Museum of the Acropolis, a museum that's actually fit to house those marbles together with the rest of the Parthenon marbles.
Minister Harry Theoharis, I thank you very much for joining me on Hard Talk. Thank you.
Thank you.